The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Cars, electronic voting, a metro system, a children's hospital, a fleet of electric buses. These are just some of the projects a modern, forward-looking Ireland should have produced on time and within budget in the past 20 years or so, but it did not. My next guest is an economist who studies complex institutions and why they fail, and by any yardstick, Ireland is failing to deliver infrastructure and public services, and we're going to find out why. Sinead O'Sullivan, good morning and welcome.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, you've been looking at the way we do things, or rather the way we fail to do things. What is your thesis?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, it's not just any one central thesis, but you're right. We have an inability in Ireland to deliver on infrastructure, and it is catastrophically worse than a lot of other places. The reason for this is kind of, you know, people will intuitively have a sense of, so I probably won't be saying anything extraordinarily new here, but it really comes down to the fact that in Ireland, we have this kind of very sprawling set of organizations and nonprofits and kind of quasi-state that end up trying to do the delivery on the behalf of the state. For many, many reasons, it is nearly impossible to coordinate all of these thousands of organizations. And what you get is what we hear about constantly, these kind of ballooning costs amidst delay after delay after delay. And in the examples I gave in my piece, many instances of halfway through, it's not working, we'll just cancel the project altogether.
Now, you talk about a shadow government, like you have people who are employed directly by the government. They are the civil servants and so on. Everyone can identify who they are. And then there are others who are effectively sort of employed by the government, Section 38 and Section 39 employees who are doing the work of government but don't have quite the status of being the government.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. So in Ireland, there's more than 400,000 people who sit within the state payroll. And this is kind of, you know, 34 billion euros a year is spent on this kind of civil service. However, this part of the government alone has swollen. I mean, it's, you know, it's nearly 50% larger than it was a decade ago. So we've added more than 100,000 people to the government since 2013. However, outside of this, we also have around 190,000 people that are kind of semi-state. They are not directly the government, but they deliver a lot of the government's programs for it. So when you put these two numbers together, you have this kind of state of more than 600,000 people, which is one person in five in Ireland that's employed by the state, either directly or indirectly. Now, the question then, Pat, becomes, if we have so many people and we have such a huge budget, why, with all of these ingredients, are we unable to deliver the projects that Ireland needs?
Now,
and that's really what I'm interested in.
You've compared the way other modern democratic states do it. Are they very different to us? I mean, are there so many NGOs and these kind of shadow government employees in other countries, or does the government actually do it itself?
Yeah, so one of the big issues is that people will say, well, Ireland is really bad at getting stuff done, but sure, look, it isn't everywhere. And I love this because it's like, yeah, well, yes and no, for very different reasons. Everywhere in the kind of modern democratic states, Australia, Canada, the US, England, the UK, are struggling at the minute. But I want to give you one example that outlines the difference really, really nicely. So a couple of weekends ago, I went to visit the London Olympic Village, and this is just an incredible story. When the UK wanted the 2012 Games built, it actually created this thing called the Olympic Delivery Authority. So it was kind of this one core body with a person who was personally accountable for delivering this body and had a very hard deadline because obviously the Olympics had to happen. It built this incredible mini city within a city within London that I went to see with my own eyes recently. And actually, very impressively, it built it kind of more than £500 million under its financial targets. So this kind of shows what a good delivery system can look like. And in Ireland, we tend to do the opposite of this. We don't have one body. We have, you know, sometimes 40, 50 bodies. we don't have one person that's named and accountable. We have this kind of deflected accountability from department to department and NGO to NGO. And deadlines come and go and nothing ever happens if anything is late or not delivered. So it's a stark contrast.
We can look at various projects that failed, and then we can look at projects that we're optimistic will actually be done. But, you know, the Metro, which is embarking on, I suppose, the tendering stage at this point, you might say, well, that looks like it might be heading in the right direction. They've created a body to run it and deliver it. But it's taken how many decades to get to this point?
Yeah, I mean, the project is incredible because, I mean, It took over two decades for someone to realize, oh, wait, there's nobody actually running this project. So we have a very slow learning curve when it comes to infrastructure delivery in Ireland. But, you know, there are four kind of main ways in which I point out that projects like this can fail. And having a delivery agent itself does not mean, you know, does not ensure success, because Slantacare actually had that. But, you know, you kind of need this core agent and accountability. Importantly, you need to be able to understand what you're delivering on. And this is one of the things that Ireland can't do because, you know, transportation, for example, is spread out against so many different departments, task forces, bodies. Nobody actually centralizes the data or the information. And this kind of means that as ministers rotate and budgets come and go, there's no institutional memory to say, this is where we were last year and this is where we need to be next year. Every day you're kind of starting from scratch and saying, what have we got here? Oh, we don't know. Let's start all over again.
It's kind of interesting to watch this process. And I watched it when I was working in RTE, you know, whenever they had to embark on a redundancy program back in the day. And I'm talking about decades ago. I was in there for some 40 years. They bring in consultants because they couldn't really, you know, face down their employees they were going to have to let go because times were hard and redundancies had to happen. So they brought in consultants to learn about the organization and its deficits and its faults and so on, and then to make recommendations, which they may or may not have implemented. But the point is, the expertise that had been accrued by the consultancy then left with the consultants. There was none of it left inside RTE to actually carry forward and maybe be able to do it themselves the next time.
Right. And this is where you start to think about not only that we do not deliver, but the cost of that lack of delivery is enormous. And the fiscal part of that is exactly what you talked about, because when you pay a consultant to do this for you, the consultant has to come in and do decades of learning very, very quickly, which is difficult and expensive. But then when they leave, if you want to do something else, you then have to pay for them to come back with the memory of what they've done and pay double to do it for you again. So not only are you starting from scratch every time, but it becomes fiscally more and more expensive because you have to pay for your own expertise to come back into the organization. And so the consultants, you know, that's the kind of first order consequence of cost. The second order consequence of cost, Pat, you'll know well, is that none of these consultants are incentivized to do or deliver on time because, of course, they make more money when it's delayed. So when you get to these kind of complex interactions between, you know, a consultant that wants a longer project at a higher rate and the state that wants a shorter project done much faster, who ends up winning? And we see that it's kind of the higher cost project every time.
Now, one of the things that's going to cost us, you know, a lot of millions this year will be the presidency of the EU, and we will have to subcontract out defending those visiting dignitaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really extraordinary when you look at the difference. You know, I think there have been some pundits that have said, you know, some people have questioned, why are we paying all of this to host the EU presidency? And others have said rightfully that, you know, this is a privilege and it's prestige to be able to host this. The issue, however, is not about whether we should do it or not. It's around why we are unable to do it at a cost that is even nearly in line with everybody else that hosts the EU presidency. And again, it comes down to the fact that we don't have any of the basic functionings of a state within our own capability, so we have to hire it in. It's incredibly expensive. The main cost of this EU presidency and its magnitudes what we ended up paying the last time, because we have to pay for foreign security services, foreign militaries to come and protect us, because we never invested that capital into our own. Also, look at the cost of hotels, putting people up, renting different hotels and then conference venues. This is extraordinarily expensive in Ireland. And why, again, why is that? Because landlords are actually the asset owners, not the state. So we end up paying the private sector or another public sector at 10x the cost. And unsurprisingly, we deliver the EU presidency at 10x the cost of everyone else.
Now, there are probably few enough examples of where the state has done it right. Maybe the creation of Uisce Éireann or Irish Water is one of those where they decided to centralise the expertise from all the county councils, many of whom had been ignoring the refurbing and maintenance of the infrastructure, into one body which had a focus and which had a person in charge whose head presumably would roll if things were not delivered.
Yes and no. I'm actually working right now on a project that looks at the success or failure of Uisce Éireann, because I'm looking right this minute at a failure of pollutant entering into Irish waters that has impacted local farming, the local farming economy. So one of the big issues is that there have been movements to kind of consolidate that. However, if you look at actual regulatory gaps that exist at the minute, it is very unclear of whether it's Uisce Éireann that is responsible for some of the pollutant activity, whether it's the corporations or the private sector itself, whether it's the local county councils, and this still has not been figured out. You have a whole ton of organizations that then kind of go around this. You have the EPA. And then again, you have instances of the county councils that are regulating themselves. And so even in the examples of where we seem to be making progress, it is not fast enough, and people's livelihoods and, of course, environmental impacts are still very high risk because of, again, the lack of systematic and through-line regulatory overrulings in Ireland. And so nobody, again, you'll find many instances of nobody being responsible for the one thing that needs to be delivered.
Is it possible, Sinead, for us to reform, to kind of grab everything by the scruff of the neck, to build up the expertise in-house within the civil service, to pay people what it takes to pay them to keep them in those jobs, because there'll no doubt be carrots dangled by the private sector for those people who are really, really good? I mean, how do we do that and do it all within an electoral cycle of 5 years?
So, yes, it is possible to reform. However, you're looking at really changing the foundational architecture of how the state works. The architecture, what we have at the minute, is a byproduct of, you know, our past and how the state grew out of this kind of post-colonial society in which we had the Catholic Church, we had foreign governments. And so it is a very complex architecture. Can it change? Yes. Is it going to change within one electoral cycle? No. What we really need to do here is deep institutional reform and against institutions that have been created to resist at any stage and at all costs reform. So it's not easy. It's not going to be, you know, a political slogan at the next election. And, you know, for that reason, politicians are disincentivized from even trying. We don't have any reward or upside for anybody who's trying to change this at the minute. In fact, there is only downside if you're a politician for trying to fix this problem. You don't get rewarded for it. And that in itself is something that needs to change.
So you have what you call performative stuff by the politicians without any real action behind it.
Yeah, I call this cosplay. You know, we write the reports and we do the photo opportunities and But what happens to these reports, okay? And this is a great example. If you go back and look at these reports, were any of them actually operationalized? And the answer most of the time is no. There's a great big fanfare, and we're one of the only countries that does this. We make the press announcements when we say that we're going to create a strategy. Most other countries will make the press announcement once we have completed the strategy. And so, you know, even since Ireland is now hosting the EU presidency, defence and security is a big issue, especially after the protests earlier this year. We are several years late at having created a strategy. Not even that we have completed and followed through with it, but that we haven't even got one. So there's a lot of cosplay going on. We kind of like to think of ourselves as being serious politicians and serious people, but there's nothing behind that that actually suggests that we're doing the role of a government.
Your analysis, which I've been reading, one, announce the plan, any plan, and watch the political pressure for change immediately disappear, since the announcement is the deliverable, which delivers nothing. Two, commission a review, and voila, you've converted angry public demand for action into calm private demand for analysis, which can be met at length by consultants over a time period that ensures everybody has forgotten the initial anger. Three, establish the task force, and the clock resets again. Four, fund the service without ever owning the service. All the credit is yours, just make the liability somebody else's. All you need to do now is cut the ribbon in public while someone else runs the thing into the ground. And five, set a 10-year target, and by the time it's missed, you'll have moved department twice, and when it fails, because it will, you can point at somebody else. You know, it's depressing.
It's not, I mean, yes. This is, it's the unfortunate reality of, you know, I mean, that's kind of satirical nearly, but it is the reality of what happens within the state. I mean, this points to a few different things. I mean, you know, we need reform. We really, truly do need reform. But we also need to put into the civil service this idea of excellence. And, you know, there are enormous amounts of talented people within the system, okay? And so what my work tries to really show is that you can take the world's most talented leaders, and we have them. We have great managers. We have great political leaders. Put them into the system, and they will just die a thousand deaths because the system is built to resist people like that. And so, you know, what ends up happening is that we become this kind of caricature. You can take any great manager or leader and put them into the system, and they will end up following the same playbook because there's no way to get around it. So the only thing that we can do at this stage is really, truly come together and say, we are willing to take on, you know, as a society, we are going to absorb the painful cost of reform. We have to do it, but it has to happen now. And that's not just for the political class to take on, but we, the voters, have to accept that it needs to change. And we can see that people aren't ready to do that yet when we look at people voting down housing and new builds in their communities. So that is not, we can blame the political class all we want, and certainly a lot of my writing does that. But we also have to look at ourselves and say, why are we willing to accept this for ourselves? And why are we not willing to allow the painful process of reform in our own communities?
Sinead O'Sullivan, systems economist and writer. Sinead, thank you very much for sounding the alarm.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.